Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Compliance Week News podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and today we're going to be talking about executive compensation, and specifically the clawback provisions of executive compensation agreements and how you can make sure you have a provision that is, in fact, effective. Now, clawback provisions, of course, allow a company to take back at least some part of an executive's pay if it later turns out that executive received his pay based on fraud or sloppy financial reporting or some other sort of wrongdoing like that. Lots of people talk about how clawbacks are a great idea, but today we want to talk about how they actually work or how they might fail to work if you do not craft one carefully. Now, joining us to talk about that is Scott Landau. He is a partner in the employment practice of the law firm Pillsbury Winthrop Shaw. He's just published a short legal bulletin on the subject and has agreed to answer a few questions for us. So, Scott, welcome and thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Matt, and it's good to be here. Thank you.
Now, first question is, we see clawback provisions in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and we see them elsewhere in legislation. I'm going to guess that those particular phrases in the law are not enough to address all the concerns a compensation committee might have. Could you just tell us what is out there for language and what language companies really do want to have in their clawback provisions?
That's right, Matt. I mean, the Sarbanes-Oxley clawback has a very limited scope. Number one, it only applies to public companies and specifically only to the CEO and CFO. Number two, it's only triggered if there is a financial restatement due to the material non-compliance of the issuer as a result of misconduct. And three, there's no private right of enforcement. The SEC decides whether it will seek recovery in any given case. Now, the TARP clawback requirements are somewhat broader. They apply to a greater number of senior executives and highly paid employees and cover any bonus and incentive compensation payments that were later found to be based on materially inaccurate earnings, gains, or other criteria. But the point of a company adopting a contractual clawback provision is that it can tailor it to its particular purposes. So comp committees will consider clawback and forfeiture provisions for many different reasons. So, for example, enforcement of restrictive covenants, such as non-competes and non-solicitation clauses, to prevent individuals from retaining bonus pay that turns out not to have been deserved, to provide for an adjustment in certain pay based on longer-term results, and to punish individuals who engage in misconduct, whether financial or otherwise. I mean, the key here is the purpose of the clawback is what will drive the appropriate type and scope of the measure.
So how long and convoluted could a clawback provision wind up being? Pages and pages worth of words?
Not pages and pages, if you will, of words, but that's right. I mean, it could be. I'd break it up into two categories. Number one is what's going to go into the applicable bonus agreement arrangement, the employment agreement. There should be specific provisions related to the clawback. It's not going to be 3-4 pages, but it could be, if you will, a page taking into, or 3/4 of a page taking into account various scenarios, but then also putting in place, if you will, the clawback policy, how to deal with, if you will, certain situations. In that regard.
So now tell us a little about what a company can do to ensure that its clawback provision is actually enforceable should something happen. What should the compensation committee be keeping in mind?
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, you want to make sure it is enforceable. You want to make sure you're taking the necessary steps from the outset so that you don't invite expensive, drawn-out litigation when the company seeks to enforce the provision. It's preferable to build the policy into the structure of the applicable bonus plan, compensation arrangement, or employment or severance agreement, and to document and communicate the policy clearly, directly, and often. I mean, these are essentially contract provisions, and it's helpful to document that there was, a meeting of the minds between the parties. I mean, employees should be informed about the policy, should acknowledge it in writing, and should agree that receipt or retention of payments is subject to clawback in the event of X, Y, or Z. The effect of the clawback should be noted in any communications describing effective bonus plans and must be clearly stated in any form of award agreement. I mean, another thing to keep in mind is the effect of local law. For example, state wage laws may deem certain payments to be earned wages that may not be recovered by the employer. How a particular bonus is determined could affect this status in this regard. Other enforcement issues include whether the mechanism will be automatic or discretionary, how much leeway will the board or the comp committee have in enforcing a clawback that is triggered. Even where there is a high degree of discretion, I think it's good practice to have procedures in place to deal with the various situations and what to do, when an executive no longer has what are you going to do when the executive no longer has the financial resources to repay the amount required by the clawback? How are you going to handle those types of situations? And it's better to think about that early on and be proactive rather than reactive.
Now, let me ask, we hear all the time in Washington in particular these days that clawback provisions are a great thing. Everybody should have one. But in your experience working with various clients out there, are clawback provisions, are they in fact common, or the ones that are out there, are they usually effective, or what are you seeing?
There are certainly becoming more common, and there's a concern that comp committees there is a concern that comp committees are jumping on a bandwagon without really thinking about how a clawback provision will work in practice and how it fits in with their broader comp scheme. You don't want to be forcing a square peg into a round hole. Executive pay packages can be extremely complex and can be challenging to integrate them within company-wide pay practices. I mean, it's very easy to lose sight of all the moving parts and just remain complacent. Yet it's more important than ever, in my opinion, for a comp committee to be able to demonstrate that the policies it adopts are enhancing company value. I mean, clawbacks can play an important part in these efforts.
So my last question is that while clawback provisions might seem like a good thing to have, I'm wondering if companies actually do need them, as in, by law, a company must have an effective ethics and compliance program to keep the regulators happy. I'm wondering, is there any comparable need like that for executive pay where a company could find itself in violation of something or be non-compliant with some regulation because they really are not looking at clawbacks for executive pay?
Interesting. These issues raise concern clawbacks that are aimed at improving compensation practices such as pay for performance principles, risk management, as opposed to measures used to enforce, for instance, restrictive covenants. But much of the activity here is taking place in the financial industry where regulators are taking clawbacks very seriously. The Federal Reserve is implementing its new compensation review policy and reportedly will promote the use of clawbacks in its recommendations. At the G20 meeting in Pittsburgh last fall, the Financial Stability Board specifically endorsed the use of clawbacks. And of course, the TARP legislation requires recipients of government assistance to employ clawbacks until that money is repaid. I don't think clawbacks are likely to become mandatory on a wide scale, but they are another area where it is incumbent upon compensation committees to wrestle with issues of accountability, of pay for performance, of not rewarding failure. I mean, the broader question might be, why shouldn't a comp committee consider how a clawback might benefit the company's pay practices? I mean, if it is determined that such measures would be inappropriate, so be it. But the committee should be able to articulate the reasons why. And in doing so, it may come upon other measures to achieve its goals.
All right. Well, Scott, that is all the time we have today, but you gave us plenty to think about and covered a lot of ground. So thank you very much for all your time.
Thank you, Matt.
And again, everybody, that is Scott Landau, who is joining us from the law firm of Pillsbury, Winthrop & Shaw, talking with us about how to craft an effective clawback provision for executive compensation agreements. As I mentioned, Scott has recently published a legal bulletin on that. You can find a link to it on our website. That is all for this week's podcast. I am Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time.